Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Purusha Sutta confirmed. We spoke about the last thing we spoke about was Brahma's description to Narada about his undergoing austerity for the purpose of generating the ingredients he needed for performance of yajna or sacrifice from the limbs of the Supreme Lord, because there was only two things. Well, there were three things. There was darkness, and there was Brahma, and there was the Lord. So from his austerity, not that he generated, but that brought about from the limbs of the Supreme Lord the ingredients for sacrifice. And Prabhupada expands on this. This is the position of a devotee, as opposed to the position of an impersonalist that says there is no God or I am God, that says that my effort, material energy is false, and he wants to become one with God. Very frustrating. Prabhupada discusses in Bhagavad Gita, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha, that one deepa, out of frustration, this impersonal philosophy arises. But out of gratitude, the devotional way of life arises. One needs ingredients, you don't have them, you endeavor anyway with the natural resource that the Supreme Lord gives. In this case, it's Brahma's undergoing tapa, and the ingredients are supplied. So this understanding that everything comes from Krishna, that sense of oneness of all things with Krishna is what's going to be coming up this evening. We're going to cover text 24 through 32. The first several verses are speaking about the ingredients of sacrifice. There's no purports, it's just lists. So if you want to perform a sacrifice in your Lord Brahma, here's what you're going to have to come up with. Flowers, leaves, and straw, along with a sacrificial altar and a suitable time. Because even the suitable, the seasons didn't exist. We had to make some offerings and take the best one out of them. Spring season is mentioned. Other ingredients. Utensils, grains, clarified butter, honey, gold, earth, water, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Samaveda, and four priests. And the four priests, each of the Vedas has these divisions. Hota, Udgata. The Hota priest makes the offering. The Udgata, he chants the hymns. The Advaryu priest, he lights the fire without lighter. No camphor either, just mantra. And then there's a referee. supervisor. And when, this is how standard yajnas are performed. One does the whole procedure, one chants the mantras, the hymns, the other chants the essential mantras, and the other referees the whole thing. And Prabhupada explains that these yajnas were performed from the very beginning, from Brahma's time, through the cycle of yugas, towards the end of Dwarpa Yuga, in this case, at the end of the up until the life of Yudhishthira Maharaj, then Kali Yuga begins, and then you don't have those priests, and we're not Brahma that can generate them. And so we have another yajna. What's that one? Sankirtan yajna. We're also bereft of good qualifications and so many good ingredients, but the Sankirtan yajna is there. Text 26. Other necessities include invoking different names of the demigods by specific hymns and vows of recompense, dakshi, in accordance with particular scripture, for specific purposes, and by specific processes. Emphasis Prabhupada makes is this is scientific. It's subtle material science, but it's very scientific. And as with science, you get a little something wrong, it doesn't work right. You get a super NASA team, a little something's wrong, and the thing blows up. A little something wrong with the Vedic sacrifice, it doesn't work. So without qualified priests, with the speaker of all the other pure ingredients, it doesn't work. There are not qualified people that know the science, nor can perform the science. So that although it's Vedic, Prabhupada's emphasis is that persons who put forward this kind of sacrifice, he doesn't put it in bold, flashing letters when you open the page, but it's very clear. Cheaters! Cheaters! Remember when I moved to Chicago, not moved to Chicago, began working in a GDC capacity in Chicago, there was a huge advertisement for an Ashwamedha Yajna. My first thought was, poor horse. Then my next thought was, poor brahmanas. And my next thought was, poor scoffers who are being cheated. But they were, you know, you got to have big money to do an Ashwamedha Yajna. Send in your money. And those of you who are donors, you share in the sinful activity for killing the horse. And we laugh, but, you know, lots of people want it. They want ritual. So yeah, this is a big one. Cheaters. But, you know, so the scripture indicates specifically it's not to be performed in this age, and still people want the ritual. And it's not just the Ashwamedha Yajna, it's the so many rituals. And there are different varieties and different locations. People like rituals. When I first visited, anybody here from Guyana? My first visit is in Guyana. You know, what's all those flags people have in front of their house all over the place? I know what it is. I know what it is. Cheaters. If they perform a yajna, you know, you're not a good, upstanding Hindu unless you have those flags in your front yard. A red one with a yellow flag and a red flag and a blue flag and a green flag and, you know, a number of flags for the different devas representing the different colors, how many, you know, how much money you spend to do the yajna. And then they go door to door. Anyway, I don't want to be offensive, but it's cheating. Thus I had to, Brahma speaking to Narada, I had to arrange all of these necessary ingredients and paraphernalia of sacrifice, not from the local Indian store. And he couldn't even like have somebody send some good ones over. from the personal bodily parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, like go in the closet, get, you know, the limbs of the Supreme Lord, and ask the limbs of the Supreme Lord to deliver your shopping list. Quite a challenge. By invocation of the demigods' names, the ultimate goal of Vishnu was gradually attained, and thus compensation, this time the compensation isn't dakshina, it's prayaschitta, and ultimate offerings were complete. So this is something that needs to be carefully considered. We find exalted Vaishnavas. Maharaj Yudhisthira performed Ashwamedha Yajnas. Karmakanda ritual, right? Prithu Maharaj performed 99 Ashwamedha Yajnas. Besides, he did it right rather than, you know, torturing the horse. Why would he do that? He's a Vaishnava. Why this ritual? This verse is giving the answer. The yajna for the age at that time was not Sankirtan yajna, it was another type of yajna. And he performed that type of yajna in the right consciousness, not in the wrong consciousness. He set the example of how to ultimately achieve the supreme goal. So, what is the verse from Bhagavad Gita where this goal is understood, the goal of sacrifice? 529. Listen to Prabhupada's translation. Very unique translation of this purport. The karma yogis, this translation is not a paraphrase, quote, the karma yogis know that the Supreme Lord is the factual enjoyer and maintainer of all sacrifices and of the austere life. Karma yogis. They also know that the Supreme Lord is the ultimate proprietor of all planets and is the factual friend of all living entities. Such knowledge gradually converts the karma yogis into pure devotees of the Lord through the association of other Lord devotees. And thus they are able to be liberated from material bondage. Unquote. So this is, it's a nice understanding. Just like the commentary that's written on Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Ramananda Roy, where the Yatkaroshi Yadasnasi Yajjahoti Didasi Yad. Nice verse. The commentary explains this is the principle of karma yoga. This is Yatamam Shantim Ritsati. It's the yajnas that are performed knowing that Krishna is the bhokta. While knowing that Krishna is the bhokta, still so many demigods' names are invoked. Little anecdotal evidence of this. One of the places that I have visited over a period of time is in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Nitai Gorsundar, very nice devotee, lives there and has developed nice sangha of Vaishnavas. So one time, knowing that I was coming, he received an invitation from the Hindu temple of Nashville to have me come to visit and take part in something they were doing. I really didn't have any interest in it, but to satisfy the Taiko Center, maybe they could meet some people, and that kind of reason, I went. And I was shocked and appalled that the priest who was trained at Udupi was doing a Karmakanda Yajna, right? You know, it's part of the main part of the ceremony. And he knew all the mantras, you know, the Om at the very beginning. He invoked invocation to the Supreme Lord. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then it went into Ganesh and demigod, this, that, 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 this, that. And I was cringing. And I spoke to the gentleman afterwards. I said, how can you do this? You're trained to do it. You know what's what. How can you do this? And it was, what's the job? I said, come on, you're a Brahmin. You don't go get a job. You perform the medical duties, and how can you compromise this? I was chastising him. Somebody that doesn't know better, I can understand, but you know better. You know very well. This is not right. How can you do this? I think he gave some kind of a weak answer, like, yeah, I'm doing this so I can get them to do that. Okay. Those who perform impure activity or wrong activity knowingly are more culpable than those that don't. I mean, such a person should be leading these people in the right direction, not off the cliff. Like this. It turns out that the main donor, I wasn't going to say this, but I will. The main donor that's supporting that temple, the cattle rancher. And that's, you know, the Hindu temple of Nashville, Tennessee. You know, they're expanding over here and expanding over there and doing karma kind of rituals with a Pete Brahmin. So there has to be some protection of the principles of virtue. I mean, we don't have to be harsh, but we have to be to stand by virtue. We were discussing this a little bit just at breakfast, how Keshava Acharya has a very nice vision of how to introduce the chanting of the holy name to people in general, well, where they may not be able to follow the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga, but they can be very attractively and very joyfully and, you know, enthusiastically brought into the circle of the holy name without compromising anything. And this is our yogya. Very enlightening discussion, and it's very effective. Just step one, get a taste for the holy name. Step two, provide that taste for the holy name to others. Very simple. And, you know, be absorbed in it. And people are, there's no compromise to get them to do that, to do this. Just do this. Anyway. So Brahma says, thus, I created the ingredients and paraphernalia for offering sacrifice out of the parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, the enjoyer of the sacrifice, and I perform the sacrifice to satisfy the Lord. So this is how Brahma did, and others who also performed even these types of procedures, but the procedure was to bring one to the lotus feet of Vishnu. Both times, Yajna-tapasam or Yajna-vai Vishnu. One of the names of Lord Vishnu is Yajna. He is the Supreme Lord of Sacrifice. the little definition Prabhupada gives of what sacrifice means. Sacrifice, quote, suggests dedication of one's interests for the satisfaction of a second person. That's a nice definition, isn't it? Dedication of one's own interests, subordinating one's own interests, to the interest of another. That's love. I have an interest, but my interest is your interest. The nectar of devotion, Pradyumna, is identified as a personality who symptomizes service, and the symptom of Krishna's son Pradyumna was very simple. If he wanted to do something and Krishna didn't want him to do something, he didn't do it. If he didn't want to do something and Krishna wanted him to do something, he would do it. That, you know, one sense is obedience, but it's service. Service goes beyond obedience, or love goes beyond duty. Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught this very explicit point. Duty and love are on a different platform. Duty can come to the position of love, but doing something because it ought to be done, that's a symptom of goodness. There are motivators for the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion and the mode of goodness. This comes directly from Lord Sakila's teaching to Devahuti, where she asked the question, even in devotional service is pure, but can devotional service be performed without a pure motive? Devotional service doesn't become impure, but can one's motive be other than pure? And the answer is yes. One who renders devotional service in ignorance does so with the purpose, I want to destroy my enemy. I want to become powerful, and when I become powerful, I'm going to get my enemy. Motivation, the mode of passion, specifically then introduces worship of the deity, so that I can get my maintenance to worship the deity. Or, so I get some recognition of being an elevated spiritualist, because I do my devotional service very nicely. So profit or adoration. And in the mode of goodness, the worship is done out of duty. I'm doing this because it's my duty. Or either it will purify my existence. It's a motivation, and we should cultivate that quality of goodness. Let me do what I should do because it will purify my existence. Or it ought to be done. It is said it should be done, so I do it. No, yeah, but just I do it. I would, but. And in the mode of transcendental life, it's spontaneous. There is some topic of Krishna, and one's mind just goes to the topic of Krishna. There's a kirtan, and one wants to go join the kirtan. It's just so wonderful. Spontaneous. And through the dutiful, the spontaneous can come. When purification is sufficient, the natural spark of attraction for Krishna awakens and spontaneous devotion comes. Particularly Lord Chaitanya's teaching is combined with preaching, combined with engaging others in this. That is, the extra ingredient is Lord Chaitanya's special mercy, the Lord Nityananda special mercy of giving this to others, the mood of the Sankirtan mission, combine that with the purity that comes And that's where this spontaneous devotion awakens. Bhaktisiddhanta taught like this, and Srila Prabhupada taught like this, and that's our channel for entering into this state of spontaneous devotion. That's this meaning of sacrifice. And every man is engaged in sacrificing his interests for others. In this world, in the name of various isms, when people make significant sacrifices, or groups of people make significant sacrifices, because instead of being mean, they're nice. That's like, you know, it's common usage of the term today. But anyway, the whole world is engaged in sacrificing energy for advancement of learning, social upliftment, economic development, and plans for total improvement of the human condition. But no one is interested in sacrificing for the sake of the Lord, as it is advised in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, there's no peace in the world. If men at all want peace in the world, they must practice sacrifice in the interest of the Supreme Proprietor and friend of all. Meaning abandoning the other types of groupisms and partyisms and bodily identification sacrifice for selfish or extended selfish interests. And we all understand that that is what's going on in the world around us. In certain ways, it goes on within the world close to us. So the cure is Krishna consciousness. Sacrifice for the satisfaction of Supreme Personality of God is abandoning all the other conceptions of the object to be benefited by the sacrifice. Krishna is to be pleased. It's a high goal, but it's the solution to the strife of Kali Yuga. My dear son, that's Brahma speaking to Narada. Therefore, your nine brothers, the ten sages, who are the masters of living creatures, performed the sacrifice with proper rituals to satisfy both the manifested and the unmanifested personalities. What's that? It's the demigods and Lord Vishnu. Because by Brahma's arrangement and through the Prajapatis, the demigods were manifested, so they're the manifested personalities, and they're indirectly pleased if Lord Vishnu is pleased, or through these karma kanda rituals, they're directly pleased ultimately for the purpose of pleasing the personality of Godhead. So Brahma is saying, I did, your brothers did. Thereafter, the Manus, the fathers of mankind, the great sages, the four fathers, learned scholars, the Daishas, and mankind perform sacrifices meant to please the Supreme Lord. We're nearing the conclusion of this section. All material manifestations of the universes are therefore situated in his powerful material energy. So therefore, Narayane Bhagavati Tadidam Vishvam Ahitam. Prabhupada explains, Brahma is now answering this verse and the next verse. The summary was like evidence. Now he's answering the question. First question is, who is the ultimate cause, the ultimate creator of the universe? Then the next is, whose energies sustain it? Well, the same person who it comes from is the one whose energies sustain it. And he sustains it through the principle of sacrifice. That is, the living entities make their connection with the personality of Godhead, and he supplies the ingredients, this, you know, this Vedic cycle of making a sacrifice, and the cycle comes around, and the living entities are maintained by the acts of sacrifice. And when sacrifice breaks down, the principle of supply breaks down, and the living entities have, their supply is restricted. So their main motivation for yajna is so they have lots of supply. But the higher purpose, which has been forgotten, is the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. But the material manifestations, the ingredients for sacrifice, are supplied by the Creator. So then the next verse goes, takes it in further detail. By His will I create, as Brahma. Lord Shiva destroys, and He Himself, in His eternal form as the Personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies, creation, maintenance, and destruction. It's all resting on His energy. This is detailing the same statement that we find in the ninth chapter in Bhagavad Gita, everything rests in Me. The relationship between the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is Bhagavad Gita is expanding the understandings that are there essentially in Bhagavad Gita. More detail. The same principle. And since this is Purusha Sukta confirmed, just as we showed the Purusha Sukta and heard the Purusha, some of the Purusha Sukta mantras being chanted, it's amplifying the same thing. The ingredients are being manifested out of the Virat Rupa, which is a manifestation of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who is a manifestation ultimately of the transcendent Lord beyond this material creation. This makes some concluding remarks. Prabhupada is emphasizing very enthusiastically in the purport about this conception of oneness. He writes, "The conception of oneness, as overly stressed by the impersonalists, is also accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord." He gives evidence that it's accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord. Lord Vasudeva is everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. It's a statement of oneness. In the Vedic hymns also, the same Vasudeva is held to be the supreme. It is said, Vasudeva paro brahma na chanyad arkosti tatvataha. Meaning, in fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudeva. And Lord Krishna affirms the same truth in Bhagavad Gita, matat parakaram nanyat. So this is this oneness, the Supreme Lord and His energies, there's this feature of oneness. And there's no one equal to Him. One without a second. Asam Urdhva. Sama and Urdhva. There's no one equal or greater to Him. He's the one Supreme. That is the source of all things. But how the personalist sees this and what they do with that understanding is very different. The difference is that the impersonalist denies personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in this verse under discussion. What is that? Lord Vasudeva is one without a second, but because He is all-powerful, He can expand Himself as well as display His omnipotencies. The Lord is described here as omnipotent by three energies. Trishakti Dhrik. So this is where the impersonalist just, well, they become offensive, or they lose it, or they can't comprehend how, same as the theme before, how something material can come from something spiritual. The solution is, you say, something material doesn't exist. It's false. Jagat Mithya. Brahman Satya. All there is one thing, and that's Brahman. And there isn't something other than Brahman. Anything that you think that exists other than Brahman is false. Living entity doesn't exist. It's imaginary. Matter doesn't exist at all. But all there is Brahman. Like, put all of existence in a blender, press the high-speed button. Come out with a smoothie. And all of this is Brahman. A Brahman smoothie. And if there's any taste to it, that's false. No qualities, because as soon as you have something, then it's not a smoothie anymore. No qualities, no form, no name, no energies, no personality. That kind of oneness. And the oneness that's being spoken of in this verse is, although he's only one, he can expand himself in unlimited ways through his various potencies, and those various potencies make these diverse manifestations in the Tripadvibhuti and Ekapadvibhuti. And there is nothing else, so there's, we mentioned this morning, there's two things, and there's not a third thing. There's the source and its expansions, and there's not a third thing. Or there's no void in creation. There's not something where there's nothing. So void philosophy is a philosophy that also is supplied by the personality of God. If he gives the intelligence to avoid it, to come up with such a philosophy. But there is no void in creation. Because that would mean there's something where there's nothing. There's the Supreme Lord, there's his energies or expansions, and there's not a third thing. So but those energies have their position of inseparableness from him, and so there's one thing. But then this is Chintya Bhedtattva. The energy is not the energetic. The part is not the whole. That's so difficult. But for the impersonalists, you know, they cannot comprehend it. They cannot comprehend it is because they choose to not comprehend it. They choose to not comprehend it because they want to become God. The struggle of the impersonalists to understand the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam is the same struggle of the impersonalists, of the materialists. The materialists want to become God, the impersonalists want to become God. And the mystic yogi wants to become God. So that prevents them from devotional service. It's unfortunate. So they should come to more kirtans and more Gitanagara retreats and more worship of Radha Damodar, more hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. The philosophical conception of the Bhagavatam is, it's subtle, but it's very clear, and it gives direction and scriptural basis to devotional service. This particular chapter, once again, it's confirming or it's elucidation of the Rig Veda Purusha Sukta portion of Rig Veda. Commentary on Rig Veda, so that one can understand how things material come from something spiritual. It's just the phrase that's used is Shakti Parinama Vad. It's a nice phrase. It's the teaching of Vyas. The teaching of Vyas is that the potencies, the Shaktis, of the Supreme Lord, by His will they transform. Parinama means transformation. So it's the doctrine of transformation. Vada means doctrine. So Vyasadeva's teaching, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, possesses unlimited potencies. And by His willing, He just wills, and He doesn't have to do anything more than that, and that's quite effortless, because he's a willing entity. Those energies transform according to the indication of His will. Sometimes this way, sometimes that way. While He's simply enjoying pastimes with His loving devotees, those energies manifest themselves in various ways. And by His will, He can withdraw those energies or whatever He likes. And that's the teaching that we're getting in Srimad Bhagavatam. So those energies transforming are then taken by Brahma, and He does His creating and performs sacrifice, and those who He generates, they perform sacrifice, and that's what we're supposed to also do, is perform sacrifice. The karma yoga portion of the sacrifice is whatever we do it for Krishna. But the spontaneous stage is awakened through the chanting of the holy name and the giving the gift of the chanting of the holy name and the message of Srimad Bhagavatam to others. And then that devotional service starts to become not just protecting us from the reactions of our fruitive work, but connecting us to more directly and intimately to the loving devotion of Krishna. Okay, so that's some minutes before the aarti begins. See if there's any comments or questions. Shri down in the back. Yeah, go ahead. You'd like to hear the difference between a Vedic type of sacrifice and the type of sacrifices that we do. Certainly some of the mantras are different, but that's one difference. But, you know, the purpose is explicitly different. Tomorrow we're going to have a fire sacrifice, an initiation ceremony. And the mantras that are chanted are mantras that invoke the personality of Godhead and His devotees. Mangalacharana prayers and so forth. The purpose is not indirectly, but directly connected with the personality of Godhead. That's the main difference. So Vaishnavas as well have their rituals. And Vaishnavas have the mantras that go with their rituals. Those mantras are direct glorification of the Supreme Lord, invoking His direct benediction and the associates of the Supreme Lord. Just like at the Pushpa Samadhi ceremony of Bhakti Chaitra Swami, behind us is the Pushpa Samadhi. And the mantras for that Pushpa Samadhi ceremony were standard Gaudiya Vaishnava mantras, where names of the associates of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya were called, invoking their mercy. That's the Vaishnava way. We're calling for the blessings, the descending mercy of great personalities and perfected souls. And by their mercy, the mercy of Krishna will come. And that's the main difference. So the other is the motivation. Motivation is not some material something, but it's devotional service. And to come to the stage of unmotivated devotional service. Yeah. Here we go. We're going to need a microphone runner. Does anybody want to volunteer? Okay.
Hi Krishna. Is there any
pronounce your words clearly, I'm not getting
it.
Demigods are Vaishnavas. To become a demigod, they must be worshipper of Vishnu. They wouldn't become a demigod otherwise. Get the boot. Wouldn't get there in the first place. They're Vaishnavas.
So why
it's not okay? Why is it said don't do that? Give the microphone to our runners, because I don't want to have just a two-way dialogue here. Several reasons. One reason is the purpose of the worshipper of the demigod is the fulfillment of a material desire. The purpose, the motivation of such worship, we could say generally, we could say almost always, and we could say is fulfillment of some material desire. Just like you heard my response to Sri Dham's question, the difference between a Vedic sacrifice and a Vaishnava form of fire yajna is the purpose is invoking the descending mercy of the Supreme Lord to come to the position of pure devotional service by the mercy of those who are pure devotees. So that is to say, the worshipper of demigods has a material motive. The demigod is not a Shuddha Bhakta. Were he a Shuddha Bhakta, he would be somewhere else besides the demigod. So, when one offers worship to a pure devotee, it's transparent. It doesn't stop there. It doesn't say, so much for me, so much for Krishna, so much for me, so much for Krishna. That's transparent, or pure devotion, is it goes straight to Krishna. But the demigods are thinking, this is for me. It's like a bride. Right? Someone's an officer taking a post, and someone gives something, and they put it in their pocket. You know how it works in India. I had a shocking experience. I did some purchasing for our temple in Mayapur, and it was a lot of stuff, and I didn't want to schlep it on the train, so I sent it by train. And I went to Delhi and went, you know, to pick up the stuff from Delhi. You know, it wasn't there. Somebody said, I know how to get it. And I went and made a bride for the guy, and there it was. I didn't know the program. I didn't know how it worked. So much goes for the shipping that goes to the train company, and so much goes into the man's pocket, and you can get your merchandise. Otherwise, it's not here. It didn't arrive yet. So that's bribery. And the demigods have that. They're not transparent. They're not pure. And the dispensation that they can offer, most important is they can't give. This was covered actually. Were you here this morning? Okay. The master, Krishna, he delivers to the Amrita, to the position of immortality, those who are his worshippers. The demigods don't have that themselves, and likewise cannot deliver it. So the path of worshipping the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, and the pure devotees of Vishnu, those pure Vaishnavas, because they're transparently representing him, is to come to that position of deathlessness. Worshippers of the demigods receive birth in the planet of the demigods. And those who worship the Supreme Lord go to the realm of the Supreme Lord. No more birth and death. Those are some of the reasons. clear? Okay. Next. Someone is even up, then way in the back.
Rumor is just going up on that. Why are elevated Vaishnavas recommended to worship Ganesh?
Like in Nectar Devotion, one of the 64 items. Well, elevated Vaishnavas don't have material desires, or those that are on that path understand they're not to approach Ganesh for fulfillment of material desire. And so that's one of the items that's mentioned in Nectar Devotion for such people. You look puzzled. We're not recommended to do that because we have, you know, we're not so trained. We're you know, you go to Ganesh and, you know, we've got this whole pocket full of material desires. And so, if they are fulfilled, it'll just entangle us further. So, this is Prabhupada's answer. Why, if it's in the list of Rupa Goswami's 64 items, why haven't you trained us? And that was his explanation. Because you go to Ganesh and you've got, you know, your material desires. And therefore, it's not been taught. Rather, we have our other processes. Through for the removal of obstacles, we worship Lord Shingadeva and Lord Chaitanya, who is the sum total of everyone, and very mercifully overlooks our material desires and our mistakes, and he accepts our devotion, taken care of. So, but your question initially is, why would elevated Vaishnavas do that?
And
that's how those who are worshippers of the demigods see Ganesh, but those who are worshippers of Vishnu don't see Ganesh in that way. Those who are elevated Vaishnavas, which was your question, they don't see him in that way. Okay? And all the way in order. Arthur, all the way in the back.
Hi Krishna.
Hi Krishna.
It's so much easier in the lectures to hear a person wants to become God himself. But that never explained. What does that mean?
Become one with him. It's Kevala Advaita. Kevala means absolute. Advaita, non-different. With that, with to there's different. There's not one brand only. But the generic version says, as I just explained, what is? And what is Brahman. And from the Vedic statement, aham, brahmasmi, I am Brahman. That's who I am. That's what is, and that's what I am, and I am Brahman. I am God. God is me. I just give up my identification with matter just by taking sannyas, put on saffron dress, and now I'm Narayan. And such sannyasis addressed one another as Narayan. Hari Bol, Narayan. Oh, fine. How about you, Narayan? Just by dismissing the material identification. Voila. Now, the problem is, their consciousness doesn't match that same elevated state of fully identifying with Brahman, and therefore such persons may do things that, you know, a good Brahman wouldn't do. And it gives a bad name to those in the renounced order of life, or those that are supposed to be God. They get their goddesses, their bevy of goddesses, and they perform their Brahman Rasa dance, etc. But you know, that comes later. The first part is first become God. And that's what it means. There's different versions. What's philosophically, what is reality is Brahman. And anything other than Brahman is not reality. So philosophically, I become God by just agreeing with the fact that what scripture says, I am Brahman. And I'm very busy eliminating other things. Neti neti. Not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. What's left? Brahman. Well, what's Brahman? That which has not this, not this, not this. Well, what's that? It's definition by negation. But that's what Brahman is. And that's what I am. And you have to be, you know, a deep philosopher studying Vedanta Sutra assiduously in order to enter into the mystery of what Brahman is, but that's who one is. So celibacy, at least when it's strictly and properly performed, Prabhupada identified this in one of the reports we just covered. Restricting oneself from sense indulgences, strictly following the path of philosophical knowledge in Vedanta Sutra, and so on. Just looking at the clock to see how we are with time. Okay? There's different varieties. Atmanivedana over here. Over here. Then you're next. I can see the hands behind you that you can't see. You don't have eyes in the back of your head. But anyway. You're next.
Specific
Shastric explanation of what happened to someone
who engages in devotional service. Sometimes after the time of death, there's some material passion that's maintained.
Yeah.
8 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. So it's not about someone who's engaging the path of your work,
Well, he doesn't complete his path. That's what happens. Up or birth again. And if you're in the third position, Krishna can intervene. You want to comment on this, Truni? Krishna intervenes, yeah. Here for Krishna. Okay? This is going to be a college question. Prepare yourself.
To do
this service, yep.
My question is, so when he was performing the sacrifice,
where did the demigods come from? From the body of the Virat Rupa. Premananda?
Hare Krishna. We have indicated the quality of, in the word of goodness. How is it that people at the service and all who are in the world?
Take the microphone so it's recorded, or he'll be unhappy with you. His recordings are the best of all the recordings because you get the direct question recorded. That's what he wants. He's just doing nice service. Thank you. It's foolishness. I mean, we come. It's a bluff. It's a block. That's what it is. It's like people who, you know, people who say, "How's it going?" They say everything's under control. The guy that's in the hospital, you ask him how he's doing. "I'm fine." It's that kind of thing. No fear. Or it's just foolish. It's like the moth flying into the flame. You know, death is awaiting. It's just ignorance. So there's passion. And it's a bluff. You know, macho. But, or it's ignorance. Yeah. So you wanted to know, where is it coming from? That's where it's coming from. From your perspective, come on. Stop being silly. Or stop bluffing. But that's, you know, because you're in a different mode. You know, the ones that are the smaller mode of passion guys, they look up to those guys and say, you know, "Wow, he's tough." You know, George Bush or something. He just barks louder. He's got bigger weapons. Fearless. Well, what is that?
I thought the fearlessness meaning, and when you hear fearlessness, it's designed to the body, and pain to the body, and things like that, you know, they have no problem, it's going to the center.
Right, like a kshatriya, he can take blows and he likes it. He can take arrows or bullets or whatever it is and he likes it. It's part, you know, the athlete, the whatever you call those sports where it's, you know, physical brutality.
So it's not fearlessness. It's not fearlessness.
Yeah, it's not fearlessness. It's you named it. It's ignorance. There is a bluff. There's a lot of pain, but they just keep going. It's passion or ignorance in the name of fearlessness. This is real fearlessness. It's eternal. It doesn't appear to be the real thing and then it disappears. It's the real thing and it stays. Along with the other opulences of the spiritual world. Ananda Vrindavan, you have something? You just wanted to, okay. Okay. Any other? Okay. I thought so. Arvind, got a question. Ashish, you going to sing? You can get the harmonium ready.
In one of the translations that you read today, you say, it is that the study of these after full understanding of the matter of creator, and after many self-academic and overcome purity, and they achieve devotion to service.
Yes.
In another Bhakti system, Sadhguru may say, Bhakti is some truth.
Yeah. So there's direct and there's indirect. And there's the indirect can lead to devotional service. Both are permitted. But there must be some bhakti mixed with the karma yoga, otherwise it won't lead to bhakti. Jagatananda?
So one of the students, he asked me, why would these philosophers even have philosophized that way? He didn't do it in the sense where they think that the world is
I already presented it. It's a philosophical step that some people feel must be taken in order to become God. Because there's the it's all one, has to say there isn't something else. But it's all one. So what's this? It isn't. It's false. And anything else? Personality? False. The soul? There is no such thing as a soul. All there is Brahman. It's only one thing. So the other things are dismissed so that I can be God. Or they may say it the other way around, to be fidelitous with the teaching, aham brahmasmi. So what I'm not is this body, and I'm also, you know, what's reality is Brahman, and this isn't Brahman. You can't have energies along with Brahman, because then it's not just Brahman. There's no energies. False. Say it the other way, for the Vaishnava, Jiva Goswami says it diametrically the opposite way. Very simple statement. Without accepting the absolute truth includes or consists of or possesses unlimited potencies, you don't have God. So they philosophize God out of existence and now they're God. Just by Jagat Nitya. Neat and clean. Shishi Radha Damodar Ki.